Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is a Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsa.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we're here to talk about news, breaking news from a long time ago in the Star Wars galaxy. Also, celebrate a return and an actor having a wonderful moment in the sun and hopefully more to come. And this day in Star Wars history, going back to the 70s. It's all here on the show today. But before we get to it, I'm going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, or talking robot car, wherever you can get this stuff, you can listen to the books there. So a little bit later, we have our Four Center recommends an audio book we think you should try out on us. We have an ask coming up, but I like catching up here. Jen, it's a weird time in Star Wars fandom. It's been that way for a little bit. Did you find a pocket of joy? Where did Star Wars find you?
I actually did not. No, I
No doubt.
You know, let me tell you what happened. So I totally forgot about The Mandalorian coming out on Wednesday. Truth be told, there was a teacher's strike that happened in LAUSD. It was also the bus drivers that were striking. So there was no school for 3 days. So my whole schedule was upended and I didn't know what day it was. Wednesday morning, I open up Twitter, not thinking. And I start seeing people tweeting about The Mandalorian, and it was kind of cryptic, but enough to where I was like, I'm starting to put the pieces together. Okay, gotta close Twitter. I went on to Instagram, and people were sharing the most obvious spoilers. I think that they thought that they were being coy. They were not being coy. It was so obvious. And immediately, the spoiler alert, if you have not seen the latest Mandalorian episode, Ahmed Best is back. We'll talk about that later. But the point is that I already knew he was back from what people had shared on Instagram of all places. And it was kind of shocking because this was at like, I think 8 or 9 in the morning. And I was like, we all know like Game of Thrones, House of Dragon, right? Last of Us, Sunday nights. If you aren't watching it, people are going to be live tweeting. That's just the way it is. So I avoid that, right?
Right.
But for this show that's released at midnight or on Tuesday, right, or Wednesday morning, I feel like we've all kind of come to the consensus that we're not going to discuss it really until Thursday. It's kind of how it's been feeling, at least when I've been posting videos. So I was shocked. I was really shocked. And I didn't really get upset or angry, but I was just like, aw, it would have been fun to experience that reveal, like, you know, watching the actual episode. Anyway, so now I don't know. Now I just won't check anything at all. Yeah. But I also must remember it's Wednesday. That's key.
Totally understandable with the sudden strike and having to reshuffle everything in your life. It's totally understandable to lose track.
Right, right. Exactly. But yeah, that was a little surprising. And people that I was really surprised they were spoiling it.
It's been a thing now, obviously, right, for over a decade since I think that conversation really, you know, has come to light. And I see people, I don't want to see even all sides of the argument. You're doing what's right, Jen. Stay off social media as best you can. But that's also not how life functions. We get news from there. We get updates. There's reasons to go there. So I think we try that balance here. Even our thumbnails or our promotions of the episodes on the day of, you know, a good redacted. Joseph does great stuff with that.
That's great.
A fine line. But a friend of mine with the Central Coast Film Society, I was on Facebook, and he was going after every news outlet that was spoiling it that morning. He was tagging them. Hey, this looks pretty good. Seems like kind of a spoiler. I haven't watched it yet. It's just like, because it was in the morning time. He's getting up, taking his kids to school. He's not up, staying up till midnight here on the West Coast. Yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing. So I get
it. Yeah, I really relate to that because we make Star Wars a priority, and because I love it and I probably would anyway, but also, you know, we're talking about it the next day, and it is a part of what we're doing to get by in the world. But there are other things I love that are just like, I'm 2 episodes behind on Picard, and it is not an indication of how much I love Picard. It's I want to watch it with my wife. And also, hey, our family needed things from us and our jobs needed things from us. And we needed to sleep, you know, and we needed to book tickets for things that were time sensitive when we only had 1 hour together that evening. And I just wish that people had more empathy for that. It isn't always an indication of, well, I guess you don't care. It's, you know, it's there only so many hours in a day. And, you know, I try not to gnash my teeth as much about it. And just the redacted thing with the tweets is just like one of those, like, you know what? I'm going to try to be the world that I want to live in. And like for this episode, when I wrote up the description for our discussion of The Mandalorian, instead of saying anything about Kelleran Beck or Ahmed Best, I put redacted. And as I was typing it, all of the trending topics were Ahmed Best, Jar Jar, Kelleran Beck,
exactly.
Jedi Temple Challenger. Like, this is ridiculous. I'm definitely walking into the wind on this one, but I'm going to keep typing redacted.
And you know what? I saw that, and that was brilliant. I thought it was so the perfect way to do it. And if I had seen just that, I would have never known.
Somebody showed up. Yeah, but
people were like sharing Ahmed Best photo and I'm like headshot and like I, you know, cryptically saying, oh, welcome back or something. I'm like, oh, okay, well obviously he's in this episode. And he's playing a Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah. It devolves pretty quickly to this, like you were kind of saying, just this moral argument, which side you stand on. And it's just, it's way more simpler than that, more complicated at the same time. Like just, I remember when Game of Thrones, you know, season four, the king goes, and that's all I'll say, just because I know people who haven't watched that series and they're trying to rewatch and they're like, hey, and people change that to their profile pictures on social media the night it happened. And it's like, I know you're celebrating death, but you know, it's just a weird time.
Wow.
To say one other positive thing, I did see several people that that we know, friends of the show and other Star Wars discussion and pop culture discussion people making use of Twitter, at least has the like sensitive content, you know?
Mm. Oh, yes. That was good.
It's usually a porn bot, but instead this time it was Amen Best. And I thought that was great, right? Because I do get the perspective of we're looking for connection. Something amazing happens. Yeah. We just want to shout it out and connect. Yeah. And that I thought was such a great way because people were like, they didn't put anything spoiler in the text. It was in the image. And then those who were able to watch were able to share and didn't spoil that for other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wonderful stuff. Yeah. The one of the great debates of our time. Spoilers. Mm-hmm. Well, Jen, spoilers here.
Yes.
Spoilers here. Good stuff. Joseph, how did your busy Star Wars and life week?
It was a good week, busy week, lots of stuff going on. You had a chance to talk to a couple different friends about Star Wars. Great to get some different perspectives and all that. Have a friend who is watching all of Star Wars, not only with his wife, but also their friend who hasn't seen any Star Wars and truly doesn't know anything and wants to watch it in the order the story happens.
Mm.
So that's fascinating to get those perspectives. Like he's not sure if she knows that Anakin becomes Darth Vader. And she's like halfway through the Clone Wars and like, he's a nice guy here. I really like him. I hope it turns out. So always fascinating to get those perspectives. Kind of the big adventure for the week is it was my wife Sarah's birthday on Saturday. And the one thing that she for sure wanted to do is go for a walk somewhere. But she didn't want to plan ahead because it had been raining, you know, and she didn't want to have her heart broken. So we're like, we're trying to decide at the last minute. And we had never been out to the Vasquez Rocks, which is about an hour drive from where we live. I think a ton of people who love pop culture are very well aware of what the Vasquez Rocks are. But if you're not, they are just these weird jutting rocks that come up at these exciting angles that are great for Westerns and look like alien planets. So they've been used in a million Westerns, a million science fiction stories, very famously in a couple of different Star Trek things, in particular the original series episode Arena with the Gorn. We've been meaning to go there for 9 years.
Wow.
And we just had that moment of like, we're trying to decide where to go. And like almost every park we would normally go to is going to be muddy because it's been raining. Mm-hmm. and they'd probably be chilly. And we're like, you know what might actually be the perfect temperature to finally go to Vasquez Rock? So we did. It was great. We took some photos, put them on social media. My wife had given me for Christmas an Etsy Star Wars shirt that said Tatooine National Park. So it's like, okay, Tatooine was not filmed at Vasquez Rocks, but it's got the right vibe.
It could have. Yeah.
It could have. So I wore that there, and that was really fun. And the Star Wars part of it, I was wearing my Star Wars shirt. I was thinking about Star Trek and all the other things that had been filmed there, feeling bad I was not caught up on Picard, which has filmed there. And then I saw, like, there weren't that many people there. We ran into maybe, you know, 30 people across the whole park. And I think I saw four different Mandalorian and Grogu shirts and all sorts of different people, kids, you know, what looked like a mom, you know, just, you know, a 22-year-old, you know, out with buddies. It was a great reset to just remember that we do get caught up in the social media discourse sphere. And it was just great to see, like, I don't think any of those people had strong opinions about whether or not Kathleen Kennedy should be fired. It was just like, we like the show with the bounty hunter and the baby. It's fun. Mm-hmm. It's a good time. You know, right. maybe I'd be surprised. But it was just that scene that just remember, like, there's a lot of people who just watch these shows and enjoy them. They like that one. They didn't like that one. Yeah. And that was a nice reset.
That's perfectly leads in to where I'm going. Number one, I've 25 years in LA. I've never been to Vasquez Rocks other than to turn left and go take a chihuahua to the boarding range there that we go to. And I can tell you there's a great McDonald's off Golden Valley Circle Road if you want some fries on the way there.
I think Kirk also fought a monster at that McDonald's.
It's got one of the double drive-in lane McDonald's things. I'm right there with you. I experienced this thing. Number one, rewatched. Grace had a lot of stuff going on with her, and she's not had a chance to watch Mando past episode one this season yet. So she had to stay tied to a couch and recover from something. And so she said, I'd love to watch. We call it in our house the Baby Yoda show, which so we watched 2, 3, and 4. And it was great to you and I, Joseph, in our reviews always talk about our partner's perspectives and how that's really valuable to us. Kind of the same vibe of they're not in the bubble. They're fans, but they're not in the bubble. Mm-hmm. And right before chapter 3, I said, hey, honey, do you want to keep watching? And I said, the next one's kind of long. I said, I'll just say this. Some people, a lot of folks, it was a little different episode. And you know, I don't know. And she was like, okay. And we watched it. And at the end of it, she goes, why did people have a problem with that? Why was that different? That was great. I didn't have any follow-ups. I was just like, no, you're right. Let's watch it before. On that note, I had to go. I'm still in a fantasy baseball league combed with a longtime friend of mine and his kid, twin boys now who are 13. So one of those cases of, you know, I've known them since before they were born, that kind of thing. But I hadn't seen him in a year, so I missed the draft last year. So it's been like 2 years. And I walk in and Star Wars Legos are everywhere. And one of his sons plays baseball. The other one's doing more theater stuff right now. And so he was like, hey, you know, he really loves Star Wars and he wants to show off your stuff. So we walked into his room. This is a 13-year-old boy and Funko Pops everywhere. Star Wars Legos everywhere. And I walked into his room and it was like, it was the N1 Lego set with Peli and that from Book of Boba Fett, Mando. There was Black Chrysanthemum Funko Pops. There was Boba Fett, Fennec Shand, and Obi-Wan Kenobi from Kenobi. Mm-hmm. And what it was, oh yeah, I love Star Wars. And there was no, the refreshing thing we all need, and we've talked before, and you just talked about it, Joseph, but to walk in a room and not have to have him turn to me and go, why was the Boba Fett series hijacked by Mando? Do you know why? I love Star Wars. And I it's not that I'm not there for those conversations, right? It's not that I don't want to analyze why Mando showed up in Book of Boba Fett or wonder about some of the news. We're going to get to some of the news stuff. But after a rather fractured week in fandom again, with even my, I've been pretty upset lately of just like how you talk about news and how you digest the Star Wars news is pretty important. But also, I got to understand other people's perspectives. And there's some talks of the unfocused nature of Mando season 3, which I disagree with all my heart, but I have to understand other people have different views on it. And it's just been a fractured week. And so I'm not saying that to be snarky towards anyone who has issues with Star Wars or has questions about Star Wars, but it is just nice to walk into a room and go, hey, Star Wars fan, huh? And just that's the conversation.
I think what I'm responding to in what you're describing, Ken, is I'm always happy to discuss what works, what doesn't work for people. But to have a conversation where you don't immediately lead with the negative, I think that's what it is. Yes. Like my lunch I had with my friend I was talking about, like he's got some things that he struggles with and we always talk about them, but we always talk about what we love first. Mm-hmm. Or like, mm-hmm. Hey, I really love this, but that one part bothered me. And even that to me is like, yeah. Now let's talk about whether that worked or didn't and why. But it's just that idea of like, I'm a fan. Let me unfold my vitriol of anger like as the first thing and the main thing. That's, I think, what I get really, really exhausted of. So, yeah, it's great to walk into a kid's room and be like, this is the Kenobi Funko I had to burn because the snow speeder was poorly executed, you know?
Yes, so true. This is my Boba Fett Funko to remind me that Star Wars is too precious with its legacy characters. Oh, my God. Anyways, that's my snark coming in. So let me try to own it, and let's move on there into Star Wars news. Oh, here we go. Look, it's interesting news. We're going to dive into it. As often happens here, we record something, we put it out, and things change sometimes right after we release a news episode. So it's a little bit of catch up, but also a little bit of covering some of the news that emerged over the last couple of days. Headline reads, Lindelof exits Lindelof project. Whoa, we've got some inception going on. Britt Gibson as well. That's Justin Britt Gibson. And a new writer emerges for what we will now officially say, the Obeid Chinoy project. I will say it right next time. Obeid Chinoy project. It's her project. All right. That's where we're at now. I understood the headline of Lindelof. It's a big name, but here we go. I guess Damon Lindelof just wanted to eat Star Wars after all. It's a wild week of rumors. Hot takes about the rumors in the regular cycle of Star Wars news based solely on reporting and not official announcements, which is something big for me. I'll explain more about that later. Shortly after we discussed Lindelof's, I'd say, cagey interview last week, it was reported that the Star Wars film project still set to be directed by Charmin Obeid Chinoy, lost Damon Lindelof and Justin Britt Gibson, most likely in February. So let's catch up on that news. Again, this is something that we say nothing official, but doesn't mean that this news doesn't exist or that this isn't happening. It's just how we process it there. But what are our thoughts there, Jen, on this?
I was surprised because I had just said in our episode, yeah, you know, I didn't think it was going to work out, but it sounds like it's going to work out. And then we get this. And as always, I was like, all right, let's just wait and see how the dust settles. Sometimes there's these rumors. No, they were clearly out. And it was actually not surprising if we were to go back and read that article that we discussed last week.
Yeah.
It sounded like he just was not overwhelmed, but just kind of like, I can't make it work. Right. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason. Or maybe it was just like, you know what? I just don't. Yeah. So this is a very common thing in Hollywood. And I, you know, you guys obviously both are writers, you know, been in the industry, like a lot of people touch a script. A lot of people come in that we don't hear about in typical projects, but this is a Star Wars project. So every single person that's involved is going to get a headline because we all really, really care. Right.
Yeah.
And it drives clicks. So my thoughts were, I'm not surprised the fact that they're out, and I'm not surprised that there's another writer that's going to come in and, you know, lead this ship to the to the dock, so to speak.
Yeah. Their exit, departure, whatever you want to look at it, is big based on just the nature. But yeah, there's that kind of, I don't want to say it's an official saying in Hollywood, but I'm several screenwriting books of my life I've read where it's like, if you get fired from a project, that's a good sign. It means the movie might end up getting made because they hired someone else to write the next version of the script. the business over there. Joseph, you've been, I kind of slid out of the writing game because, you know, I just fired myself from so many projects before I started. you're in there pitching and doing a lot of good stuff right now. So you're living a lot of this right now. But your thoughts on the follow-up to the KG interview in our discussion?
Yeah, I think KG is a good way to describe it. I think I got overwhelmed with my own hope last week. I think that interview did really sound like, you know, by the time he did say, like, maybe sometimes you're thinking I'd rather be, eating than cooking when it comes to something like Star Wars. I was so hopeful that it was just like, oh, he's kind of nervous about committing to announcing this in a couple weeks. And the interview really did sound like he was like, yeah, I decided not to.
Yeah.
Mea culpa on perhaps being too hopeful last week. For me, I was really excited about the idea of a Lindelof-led project because of Kathleen Kennedy's comments about looking for someone who is a Favreau or Filoni-like on the movie side that really wants to shepherd a lot of movies set in the same era and can give a big commitment. And I think Lindelof did such a great job on Watchmen, really celebrating what makes something special, also plunging into new territory and shepherding it while also absolutely relying on other voices. So all those things got me really excited about Lindelof. But at the end of the day, if he doesn't feel confident in it for whatever reason, which we don't know, there isn't even reporting on, is it that he was like, this script is not exactly what I wanted it to be? I guess there is some reporting on it, but take that with the largest grain of sand I can humanly possibly find. Boulder-sized grain of sand.
Mm-hmm. Vasquez rock size.
Yes, exactly. Large alien diagonal rock salt. But we don't know why he and Justin Britt Gibson, are they like, we gave a stab at it and it's not feeling right? Is there a disagreement about where it should go? Does it need to match up with another script? I at this point don't care. Whatever reason, for him, it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. Great. Then you should, if you try to crack something, you shouldn't just stay with it because you want to be with it. If it's not feeling right to you for whatever reason, walk away. You know, J.J. Abrams and Damon Lindelof have a little bit of a relationship too. And maybe, yeah. maybe like Abrams like, they're not going to go easy on you, buddy. Just so you know, Lindelof, this is going to be a rocky ride. Who knows? So I'm disappointed because I thought he might have been the right creator to help shepherd a big thing. But if it's not right for him, then I'm glad he backed away. Then the other side of it, that's like the actual news, right? And then the news about the news, the discussion of it. I really look forward to focusing more on the actual stories instead of the constant behind the scenes that is a part of it. But at the end of the day, you know, most people fell in love by watching Star Wars and then wanted to watch the documentary. Right. And I want to get back to falling in love with the story and speculating on the story as much as we speculate on the behind the scenes. I do think this is all super standard for creative process for Hollywood. It is so magnified because it's Star Wars, mm-hmm. and it is a bumpy time. Absolutely, there's no doubt about it. The history of Star Wars films are bumpy. That Rogue Squadron being announced with the video from the director, and then there's no doubt about it. It's bumpy, but it's a bumpy time in terms of where the franchise is at, where streaming is at, all those things, and it wouldn't feel as tortured if every little beat of the behind the scenes wasn't being announced. I was affected by one line in the Variety article. So like, it's not that I doubt these things are happening because I trust these traits that confirm it. So I think all of these events happened. But it is important to me to say they were never officially announced because the company is trying to be cautious. They're not announcing this. They never did announcing it. And this article from Variety says, Lindelof and Britt Gibson departing, quote, becoming the latest creatives to part way with Lucasfilm after signing on to develop one or multiple new Star Wars film projects to great fanfare. That exact line is what hit me. Like, the trades made the fanfare.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Lindelof didn't make the fanfare. Lucasfilm didn't make the fanfare. Kathleen Kennedy didn't make the fanfare. And I think we just kind of, I want to own that as a Star Wars fan of if I'm this invested in it, that it makes money for everybody to talk about the development process constantly, then it's a part of this cycle where if we're going to, you know, stare at every, if we're going to be in the kitchen while they're cooking, you're going to see some messes while they make it.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at there. And I feel as though, you know, even I want to be even more clear about it. Even on my own personal show, I released something about how we discuss pop culture is important because it ties to the real world real fast. And this is where we're at right now. I'm with you too. Like you released a tell-all book of all of this, the making of Star Wars movies in the modern era. I'm going to read it and it's going to be one of my favorite things. I love kind of juicy things like that. Right. I've said often the war for late night with Letterman, Leno and Carson is one of the most fascinating stories in all of history. I'm telling you.
It's so good. Yes.
It's so amazing. I love it. Absolutely love this stuff. I think though, in a way, it's all changed and it changed with Solo for me. So we are talking about it's important that we engage with the art. It's what we do here. Now, there's other podcasts that deal with the news, and I'm not just talking about Star Wars podcasts, but movie news is their brand. So, of course, they're going to deal with it there. It has changed. The game has changed. It changed with Solo. Last Jedi was its own thing. We know why. But even Rogue One, right? The reshoots conversation, all that kind of stuff. So people go into the movies with that more than they ever used to do that. So now Solo was sunk for a lot of reasons in the public. And I think it was, if you watch the movie and you don't love something about it, which is not uncommon for any kind of movie, you came out of that movie going, well, they fired Lord and Miller and all. You're talking about the news. You're not talking about the art. So Solo 2 doesn't happen because we're not talking about the art. We're talking about the business of it too much and we're engaging with it. It's almost like, that's going to happen here. I keep saying this, and I said it in my podcast, I've joked about it here. I'll try to be short about it, but it's like, if I'm in the kitchen, back to kitchens, And I'm thinking about pizza for dinner, and some scooper or press adjacent podcast reports on Ken's thinking about pizza for dinner. But along the way, I change and have tacos. The tacos come in front of you and you go, but pizza, what happened to pizza? And you're not even looking or engaging with the tacos I'm serving you. You're wondering why I didn't go with pizza. And it sounds silly, but that's kind of where I'm at when it comes to Star Wars. It's become frustrating. This stuff does happen, but a movie in development does not mean a movie's getting made. Two writers leaving is so common. Even if it was because Kathleen Kennedy hired this director and they didn't want the director and they're not getting, that might come out in the wash, but this film's still happening or a film's still happening. Something's going to happen. And yeah, it's been bumpy. Joseph's not wrong there. It's been horribly bumpy at times. Going back to Trank being the first one. I was sitting there in the third row of that panel. Josh is sick today. Wheel me out if I'm directing a Star Wars movie. Yes. So yes, absolutely. It's been bumpy and channels that deal with the news should be their focus. That's not our focus here. And it becomes frustrating when you try to say, hey, did you like Solo? Well, you know, I would have liked to seen Lord. No. Did you like what Ron Howard landed? If you don't, you don't. But that, talk about that. Talk about that. And this is spread out to so much of society. And that's why I think it's big for me. It's a little bit of a hand on the desk thing of it's not a denial of the news. Trades are real. Movie news reporting is very real. Going back to the days of Army Archer, right? It's a thing. It's a real thing. But how we take that information, what we do with it has destroyed our discussion and appreciation of things. And that's where I get frustrated about this. So you said earlier, Joseph, I kind of don't care. I'm excited to talk about the next part of this news, but until we're sitting there in London and they say something, I just don't care as much. And I think that's even me 3-4 years ago, especially when I was working on other shows. So I don't know. I want taco.
Can you imagine though, if George Lucas was making a New Hope Star Wars back then, all the drama with that production, can you imagine how it would have been covered? My gosh, it would have changed. But we look at the final product as, wow, all those challenges happen. Look what's on screen. It's almost seen as like a positive. It's a triumph. Whereas I feel like people become so cynical and then they go into the film and they have all that background, that knowledge about, oh, this person was fired or this didn't work. I'm going to sit there and pick apart everything I see because I've now become an expert rather than just like, yeah, of course, there's always drama when you're making a movie or making any sort of art. And part of the fun is seeing how it all comes together. And like you said, so well, Ron Howard really landed that. And it's so much fun to watch. It's such a shame that all of this talk has really overshadowed the work.
Yeah, I don't know how to fix it.
I don't either.
hug everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a matter of everybody gets to choose how they engage. And I think, you know, being interested in it, being aware of it, you know, is to me fine. It's just do you want to engage with the story or do you want to turn it into a, you know, like, do you want to have a fantasy football league for creators?
Yeah.
You know, are you approaching this as, oh man, I recruited Damon Lindelof. now I'm going to lose points in my league. Like, I think that's the thing to me is like, I don't want to, the stories behind the stories are fascinating. They're valuable to cover all that. I just, it's the getting so gamified and like, I see some people maybe talking about the actual content of DC movies, but other it's like, are you with Snyder? Are you with Gunn? Are you with, Aquaman? I don't know. It's so much about the sort of gamifying the people behind the scenes, like they're playing a sport rather than engaging with the art.
And ask those news people that cover the news who have the movie news. Hey, what did that project mean to you? They don't have a lot of answers that I love. And I'm just being blunt about that. I just don't think it just goes. I did some more Mutant this weekend of, you know, the whole Mando 3 is unfocused. And it's just like, cause yeah, you're more focused on behind the scenes stuff and you're not really focused on what's on the screen. Taco.
Yeah. Last quick thing for me too, like just an ongoing thing with Star Wars, I think has been true for almost its entire run, true of other things as well, of, clearly it is beloved, But because it's beloved, people can get so much clicks and money from constantly talking about how it doesn't work. Like, well, if it if it truly didn't work, you would not be rushing to get out every headline possible. Because you know what? People care about Star Wars. Right. Even though so much of our discourse can get negative, clearly it works. Clearly people love it, or there wouldn't be so much, frankly, money in turning it into something to bash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some days we just, maybe we should just do that so I can finally drive a car built in the same decade I live in. let's talk about the other side of the news out here. While the fandom was discussing these two creators going, one was coming in and, like you said, probably had been in for a while. Variety reported that Peaky Blinders, my whole life I thought it was Pinky Blinders. I apologize. The Peaky Blinders creator, Stephen Knight, also the writer behind Dirty Pretty Things and Eastern Promises, Viggo, what's up, has been brought on to pen the screenplay of the Obaid Chinoy film. No further information, no comment from Lucasfilm, of course. So, hey, thoughts on this. And by the way, love discussing this stuff because this is what flavor do they bring? What could we be expecting? This is the fun stuff of it here, and I'm always here for that. So, Joseph, any thoughts on what Stephen Knight can bring to Star Wars? And did you watch Pinky Peaky Blinders?
I have not seen Pinky Little Blinders. No, I have not. I am not a Stephen Knight expert in any way, shape, or form. I believe out of his entire impressive writing career for television and film, I think the only thing of his I've watched is the game show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which I quite enjoy. So I hope there's a lot of quiz show dynamics. He was one of the three creators of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So I hope this entire thing, I hope his movie is Ray gets quizzed about the history of the galaxy. And has to phone a friend by making a force connection to Luke to get some answers. I actually don't want that. That sounds awful. Anyway, I do the things that I'm interested in is he is obviously an older writer, a venerable writer, done a lot of different genres. I think that's really intriguing to me that he's done lots of intense action. He's done period dramas, heists, romantic comedies. I think especially for Star Wars's big return to the screen, I would be for myself excited by a Star Wars film that goes back to the genre stew, a little bit of everything is part of the charm of big screen Star Wars. I'm still all in for if they announced, hey, we're doing this huge, this is the return to epic scale. We're doing this big Star Wars thing. And then for a much smaller budget, Taika Waititi is making a comedy road movie. Like, great. Or somebody else is making a horror film for a lower budget. I'd be fine with that. But for the kind of big epic return, I'm really interested in this idea of lots of genres. The other thing that grabbed me, I have not watched even a second of Peaky Blinders. Pinky Blinders or pipe cleaners. I haven't watched any of it, but I did Google it. And now I know this, that Peaky Blinders is a British period crime drama television set in Birmingham. It follows the exploits of the Peaky Blinders crime gang in the direct aftermath of the First World War. So that was intriguing to me if the film is set in the post-Rise of Skywalker era. Mm. And if some of the major conflict is coming with, hey, characters have great intentions, but this wasn't the alliance to restore the Republic. The New Republic failed. So what is next? Who is in control of the galaxy? And what conflicts are arising in that vacuum of power and confusion about, you know, society and how we're going to work together and if we're not, and what a perfect vacuum for crime. Again, haven't watched a second of Peaky Blinders, but since that is the general setup, I'm intrigued if there is an energy to be like, hey, the ideas we're working with are similar to the ideas of Peaky Blinders. Let's ask the Peaky Blinders guy.
I'm familiar with the projects he's worked on in name only, other than Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which I watched every night like the rest of America back in 2000. Dirty Pretty Things, Eastern Promises. I know the famous fight scene in Eastern Promises, but I never watched the movie. But I love your take on that, Joseph. It's kind of the fun. We did this a lot with Andor, right? And it kind of played out as speculated just by the fandom in general. You know, Bo Willimon showing up like, oh, he does like hard boiled political stuff. Guess what we got? You know, it does kind of work, but it doesn't mean Steven Knight looked. He's got some like comedy rom com kind of work in there too. So it could be all of it. But if this is what he's known for, and it syncs up, and I love this stuff here, Jen. So take us into your thoughts on Steven Knight, the man behind Peaky Blinders, who was, I think, part of the gangs in Greece.
I have not watched any of Peaky Blinders, but I will say that I think about Eastern Promises very often, because Viggo Mortensen's performance in that film is one of his best, I think. It's it's a really, really good. And also, what was it? Dirty Pretty Things. I remember that one as well. Also very, very good. And they're both gritty dramas, right? And there's kind of like a mystery, and where they have the protagonist tries to uncover the truth. That was interesting to me. Naturally, I think he is bringing a gritty drama thing to Star Wars, very much like Tony Gilroy, right? Another seasoned veteran of the industry. You kind of know what you're getting. Now, here's something that's interesting, because he did an adaptation of Great Expectations, which just came out on FX, I think last night or the other night. It's gotten mixed reviews. People are saying there's a lot of sex, there's a lot of violence. It's definitely not the adaptation of Charles Dickens' novel that you might expect. But there is some, not everyone is so thrilled with it. So that is something that's interesting to me, because I know Lucasfilm is really trying to obviously have good press, good PR. And I also think that they're being smart, because they've seen where have their successes been. Rogue One was a big success. Andor, obviously. So I think that this film is going to have a darker tone and will appeal to an older audience, which is not what I thought the Lindelof project. I thought the Lindelof project might skew a little bit younger. I kind of feel like this might skew a little bit older, like, 20s and up.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we talked a lot about Charmaine Obaid-Chinoy's background when the reports first broke, and her history as a documentarian dealing with extremely serious social issues that everybody behind this seems like they have the chops to dive into, in the same way Andor did in Rogue One, and lots of episodes of Clone Wars dive into social issues that are galactic. But reflect things that are going on in the real world. And I think maybe, you know, the way Solo tells you in the opening credits that it is about economic inequality and means of production and resources. It is not subtext. It's literal text on the screen. But because the movie is also fun, and it's Solo and all these things, that it doesn't really sink into people's souls the same way it does when you can't look away from it, the way you can't look away from it in Andor. And I wonder if it will be I'm intrigued by what you're saying, Jennifer, where maybe it is going to be a film that is structured so you can't forget what's at stake.
Which I think would be pretty valuable. Pretty valuable. That said, and yeah, I'm with you, Jen, on that idea, and especially when you bring on someone like him. But wouldn't it be funny if Steven Knight was like, oh, finally, I just really want to do a Wookiee picture. Could we just, I'm waiting for this. Really love the holiday special.
Yeah, exactly. finally.
I want to bring Krellman in, or Son of Krellman. Like, it'd be great.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, we'll find out. It's an intriguing, it's an intriguing pick, for me, even if I'm not super familiar, but just looking at the resume, I think that kind of stuff does track. So we shall see. There's been more rumor mongering amongst those who cover the press, the Press Adjacent podcast, all that kind of fun stuff about the Star Wars movie plans and what will be announced at Celebration, which is, oh my gosh, I can tell you by my stress, is very, very soon. And all that, except really makes a ton of sense that this lineup. I'm very intrigued by some of these rumors. This is one of those Force Center temperature checks we've kind of joked around. I think even at going into Anaheim, this big what if of, You know, Celebration comes and goes, and there's no movie announcements. What does that look like in the world? What does that do to us there? So, Jen, going back to you here, any further thoughts on what might come out of Celebration as you cover it from the safety of your own home?
That's right, from CouchCon. if the script is still being written, I can't imagine that they would announce anything at Celebration. I think that that would be very, very bold. I mean, maybe they want to change the narrative. Maybe they want to, you know, show that they are in control. The wheels are turning. But, you know, not having a movie announcement is fine because we have Ahsoka. And, you know, so there's going to be a lot around that. Obviously, more Mandalorian stuff. So it's okay. I think it's okay. There's things happening in Star Wars beyond the movies.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I definitely want to come out of London with a picture of it. I definitely do. And I do feel needed's a strong word, but it'd be fun more than anything, right? What fun, yeah. What fun to come out of this with a movie plan or three pictures or Tyke on stage, someone else on stage, a new writer on stage, hired that week. Who knows? Oh, yeah. It's all going to be right out there in front of us, Joseph, in just a week or so.
Yeah, it'll be amazing when Damon Lindelof walks on stage and says, we all changed our minds. I'm joking. I think it would be nice to have a film announcement. I think a lot of fans I know I've heard and seen people say it would be great to feel like we're on track to the next thing. So it would be great just for that, for the sort of the excitement of building toward 2025. If all we get is the name of a film, would be great. That would be exciting. I think if the announcement was larger, the things that I'm most intrigued by is not who is doing what, whose film is still alive, who isn't. That is all valid to discuss. But the thing I'm more interested in is the structure of it. Is it just one film that could launch a trilogy? Is it multiple films announced set in the same era? Or is it multiple, not immediately connected films? The sort of the structure of how they're approaching Star Wars in the cinema is kind of the thing that I'm most interested in. If they announce one film or if they announce 17, it's to me how they're connected is what I'm really intrigued by.
Mm-hmm. I love that look on it too. Without a doubt, this is, Even if it's just one movie, it going forward, it means more, right? I don't want to say it's a new era, but you know, the amount of time 2025 and 2019 Rise of Skywalker, that's a new era of Star Wars films, indeed. So getting a peek into that is just exciting, and I choose on that.
Yeah, and if they don't announce anything, I think that will be a big talking point, right? Of
absolutely.
Lucasfilm stumbles again, blah, blah, blah. and not blah, 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 because it's not a big deal, but because we've been trapped in this conversation cycle for several years. But in the big picture, right, if they don't announce the film at Celebration and instead it's announced, you know, on a random Tuesday in June, time will forget. The movie will come out and we will all react to the film.
Yeah.
I think the news is great. I want there to be news at Star Wars Celebration. I think there will be news about Disney Plus shows. But Celebration, it really isn't just, it's not a giant press release. It really is a celebration, a place to just be excited about Star Wars.
Without a doubt, conventions overall, San Diego, of course, New York, you're so right. There's this expectation of news, understandably, because that's what it has become. But I don't think we should move too far from that core at times. I'm speaking to myself. Sometimes you look at a panel, you and I, Joseph, have been looking at panels the last couple of days, and it's like sometimes in my head, I'm like, I don't know. I'd rather go get floor drunk because I just don't want to celebrate droids. It's like I find myself wanting to go to the news generating ones, and that's just 10 plus years. I think San Diego with X-Men and then Hunger Games, all stuff exploded into something that wasn't always supposed to be, which is fine. Things change and studios found, hey, here's a way to get people hyped and get our news out. But yeah, temper expectations sometimes is not a bad reminder. Right. Okay. Any final thoughts on this big story? Jen, anything? You just want to watch the movies?
Yeah, I do just want to watch the movies. But you know what? It is interesting because if the movie's going to be released in 2025 and there's no celebration next year, it will be a little weird, right? To not have a big triumphant. I mean, I was really expecting Damon Lindelof to come out on stage. I really, really was. There's still a part of me, though, like you're saying. And he'll come along with Stephen Knight and they can go out together and Justin Britt Gibson. But it's all right. Like you said, Joseph, at the end of the day, we'll see the film and we will all forget and we'll, you know, discuss whether we love it or maybe there's some notes.
Yep. Yep. I guarantee you there is the 10-year-old watching Solo right now who has no idea that it didn't perform well at the box office.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that. That's a new segment. Jen has notes here on 4 Star. There we go. We're about to move on, but Joseph, any final thoughts on this before we take a break?
No.
Love that. No notes from Joseph. We got no notes today, folks. We just want to celebrate Star Wars and read Star Wars books. Another one added to my collection this weekend that is on my table. We're going to do a 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we have?
That is right. If, unlike Ken and I, you're all caught up on the High Republic, we are recommending Battle Scars by Sam Meggs. We are excited to read this one. We are going to discuss this one eventually. We got to get through the thrill of Star Wars Celebration, and then we will be discussing that one.
We will indeed. Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4Center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4Center. For your free audiobook. All right, quick break. Other side, we are going to talk about Mandalorian Season 3, Chapter 20/4 of the season. Spoilers ahead. Be warned. Be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to Force Center. We're looking at Star Wars news, breaking news from a long time ago, or just last week, or sometimes 10 minutes after the show. We want to make sure we have our Ask segment here. I got so excited about the news, I just raced right past it like a Jedi on a speeder in Coruscant. Joseph, we are, we've been talking about a lot of wonderful things, asking from our hearts, and what is today's?
We are still asking about, we're asking ourselves. Yeah. No, we are asking you, sharing with you our mission. We are on a mission to make our Patreon more robust. We have looked at our history and realized that it is you, our kind listeners and supporters, who have given us the most consistent support. And we want to build on that so we can keep doing what we're doing, experiment with new things. Everybody has been very supportive. Thank you to everyone who has joined. If you are curious about joining, we've added some new rewards. There is a mug. There is an exclusive podcast. There is, of course, our Discord, where you can have safe and fun conversations about Star Wars. One of our biggest things is we are experimenting with Other Center, where we talk about non-Star Wars stuff. Ken and I are doing an adventure through the world of Indiana Jones. Our first episode of Indiana Jones in the Perilous podcast was released last week, and people are really enjoying it on Patreon. So if you want to check it out, you can join us there. And we're building to a goal of reaching 2,000 at $2,000 a month. Jennifer is going to be able to make a new YouTube series, adding visuals to some of her old audio episodes of just great investigations into great Star Wars topics. So if you're at all interested, go check out patreon.com/ForceCenter.
Yeah, check it out. Indeed, some exciting stuff over there. And what Joseph said up top is really important. We looked at what makes us successful, and it's the love, support, and understanding of those who are best. It doesn't mean just listeners, casual, you know, everything helps. Every click, every retweet, every download, all that stuff helps. But it's changing industry, and the podcast industry is going through some changes right now. We realized that this is one of our greatest sources of support. So we appreciate it there. All right. Let us get into, this is a news story. It's a different kind of news story, but it's one to talk about. I think the biggest Star Wars news last week was Ahmed Best. I think that absolutely is the place to go. And he had an interview that took place prior to the public scene, chapter 20 of The Mandalorian. So that's a good note there. But Ahmed Best spoke about bringing Kylo Ren back from Jedi Temple Challenge to The Mandalorian with the staff at StarWars.com. Apologize, going to read some quotes and then we'll dive on in here. Best said he was asked to take on the task of saving Grogu by Favreau and Filoni, and it was their support that finally convinced him to do it. He expressed some doubt for a variety of reasons, saying, "Honestly, I had to think about it. I've been in the Star Wars world for such a long time, and my story is such a roller coaster ride of emotions. So coming back to Star Wars wasn't an easy decision for me. It was something I could have immediately said yes to. I did have to, it wasn't something I could have immediately said yes to. I did have to marinate over it for a bit. I mean, I was excited. I don't think people really understand how much I care about Star Wars. Like, I really care. I really, really care about the storytelling, about the mythology, about the fans. I really want Star Wars to deliver. And if I became an obstacle to that, then I shouldn't be in it. I don't want to be bigger than the story. I don't want to be bigger than the mythology. I want to contribute. I want to add to it. So it took me a minute. I love that quote. Let's start here. Joseph, Jennifer, we're going to ask, why did the appearance of Best work for us beyond just the fun nature of the actor's return? But hey, there's a lot there, Jen. You slide in here and give us your thoughts on that.
Oh my gosh, what an interview that he gave. So much to discuss. Okay, so when I saw his return, which I knew was already coming, the whole episode actually felt very kid friendly. That's not a criticism. It kind of felt like the Mandalorian that has been the Mandalorian all along. And I immediately, my daughter was home and I showed her, because she actually saw a GIF of that, of him saying, "Everything's going to be okay, kid." She's like, oh, what's that? Because I think she remembered him because we used to watch the Jedi Temple series. and I was like, oh, let me show you the sequence. Very excited. She was enthralled by that whole sequence with Grogu. She wanted the journey to continue. And then when it went back to the Mandalorian, she was like, oh, okay. she's like, who's that? I'm like, the armor. She's like, oh, okay. Yeah. So I thought that was really, really interesting, because it was a smart choice for the story to have this. We built up, who is the character that rescues Grogu? Who is it going to be? Right. And I felt like if it was somebody that was a Jedi that was much more well known, it might have made the story feel smaller. Like we, you know, the galaxy feels smaller. Mm-hmm. Choosing a character and having it tie in to the Star Wars game show is brilliant. My daughter, I was like, do you remember him? She's like, yeah, it made sense to her. Like, this, of course this Jedi is having adventures in a game show and in The Mandalorian. I just love that. I love how a character is a character, whether it's in a game show, whether it's in a novel, whether it's in an animated show. I love that about Star Wars. It's just so brilliant. And there's just so much to love about his performance, but we'll talk more about it in a little bit.
No, I love that. I love your daughter's reaction. Ah, the Mando guy. All right.
I know. Oh, gosh. I'm going to work on that.
Yeah, the armor. What now? No, it all works. It all works. Joseph, dive into that quote and more.
Yeah, no, we talked about it a little bit on our Mandalorian review, but this is really wonderful to hear some of these things from Ahmed Best's perspective, obviously. Mm-hmm. I really agree with Jennifer. I think it is kind of wonderful that that a character is a character in Star Wars, and I think it's been clear that the Mandalorian in the Mandoverse is embracing that, you know, from Cobb Vanth to Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. All of these characters are, you know, to Black Chrysanthemum and on from all these different sources. A character is a character. It's all a connected thing. And Favreau has really been out there on his rounds of interviews about this third season of Mandalorian, saying that it's conscious to pull from lots of different elements of Star Wars, from legends to books to comics. Mm-hmm. Even the highlighting of the mountain, right. Umate, you know, it's from canon, but it got such a huge feature moment in that first High Republic book that to me it felt like, yep, I know that's not where it is from, but that's mm-hmm. where my emotional relationship to it is from. That I think the continuation of that, like every part of Star Wars matters, to bring in somebody from Jedi Temple Challenge is great, to bring in a character from Jedi Temple Challenge. And to me, I think it was great that it was a wonderful surprise and it does have meaning, but it was not a distracting narrative. I have said many times that I would have loved for it to be Quinlan Voss. I know some people were like, what if Barriss Offee escapes, I assume, Republic prison and has a change of heart? Or live action Gungi. Oh, I would have been all over that, right? The Terra Sanube puppet, I'd be over that. I don't think, I know there's some stuff in Battle Scars, but Sarah Junda from Fallen Order, I don't know if her exact location at Order 66 has been locked down. So like, hey, that's a list of people that I find fascinating. Mm-hmm. But I would have been a little bit more focused on their story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And because Kelleran's existence in Star Wars was canon adjacent at best, mm-hmm. but what we know of the character is minimal, mysterious, but we know he's a teacher, a caregiver, mm-hmm. a protector. And it just was so resoundingly Jedi that there is a crisis and I am focusing on what I can control and what I have committed to, what I have sworn to, which is to protect the young. I'm not running off to try to take out Anakin. I'm not running anywhere else. I am doing what I need to do, which is try to protect these younglings. So what little we did know about his story was just so resonant that we just stayed in that idea, which is the idea of the entire rest of the episode, too, of, you know, parents protecting children in this cycle of violence. So it worked with the rest of the episode. And it worked great for my wife. She was like, I was watching her watch it out of the side of my eye when we watched it together, and she didn't say anything other than being invested in the story. And then when it was done, she's like, that guy's kind of familiar. I was like, may I? And she's like, yes. He's like, so, kill him back. I'm my best.
Yeah. Grace had almost a teary eyed reaction. You know, Phantom Menace has a special place in her heart. And she very warm smile when Beth shows up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well said. I don't want to cut you off, Joseph.
No.
But now I'm with you on it there. And there's, Yeah, a lot of we did discuss on the discussion episode this past week. And yeah, you know, Quinlan Voss, there's always great what ifs. Gungy was one too, especially since, you know, the Bad Batch and all that kind of connection. But it speaks to one of the things I love, which is I don't need to just check a box. And not that any Quinlan Voss wouldn't be a check box. It could have been something else, but it would have been like you said so well. It then really becomes more of the Quinlan Voss story that we wonder in. Not that we don't want to know about the Keller and Beck story, because we do. But it really works. And it wasn't just like the call comes to Ahmed and goes, look, I want to be in the story, not above it. And Filoni and Favreau go, oh, interesting concept. Okay. They clearly came to this decision. I'd be fast. I want a Disney gallery just on this casting decision, right? Just on the choice, this character decision. Because it's something that probably was in line with some of this overall thinking we have here of just like, it's a character that would do this. It's a character that if we could place in there, because remember, like you said, Kanan and Jason with Jedi Temple Challenge, Joseph, it was the timeline, right? That was part of it too, if we didn't quite know what. But to go, hey, this works right here for the character and for the story. It was perfection in so many ways. And yes, it's absolutely about Ahmed Best for us. But what you're talking about with Sarah in that moment, she's not leading with that, you know, and other people engage with it in a different way. And I love that. Cause even those that don't know, those that don't have Joseph on the couch next to you going, can I let you know, you're going to now want to know. Right. And it becomes thing. And again, but in this way that isn't just simply, and I guess I'll stop myself there. If you don't know who Quinlan Voss is, you might be in the same ballpark. But for the Star Wars fandom discussion, I think it does really work to say, hey, we're not necessarily focusing on him above Grogu. We're looking at Kelleran with Grogu. Well, I think before we move on to the other stuff here, there's so many wonderful quotes from Ahmed Best, who just just is a very wonderful human being by all accounts. You know what I mean? Just every answer is just so wonderful and thoughtful and great. And he's been through so much as we know about. What does it mean to us that Ahmed Best appreciates the mythology of Star Wars to this degree? Like, you get that from the interview where he's like, no, this is important stuff here. The storytelling, the mythology, and what it does. He's a teacher. He's a professor. He gets what this stuff can do. So that got me excited, Joseph. I got to imagine it got you excited.
Yeah. I mean, I think like a lot of the people involved in Star Wars, he started as a fan, right? And has a real appreciation for it. I think he is a storyteller, and I think that it's fun to hear him talk about that, to talk about his love for Star Wars and the way that he thinks about it as it's a mythology. Here's what it means to fans, right? To me, just such a key part of Star Wars is that it has a sense of discovery, a sense of what if, a sense of play. And I understand because it has been so successful and it means so many different things to so many of us, it can get to be like something Damon Lindelof said of like, there's so much reverence for it. Like who am I to add this a new spice? Right. I think that's great. And you do have to have reverence, but it's nice to also be countered with that sense of play and discovery and building. And I think that in everything that Ahmed Best has ever done, from Jar Jar to Kelleran with Star Wars to voicing Jar Jar in the Clone Wars, there has to me been that sense of, how can we add to this mythology? What new ideas can we explore? How can it be in rhythm what has come before but been a little bit different? So that's what I hear in what he's saying, and also to hear him, you know, wrestle with, I want to make sure I'm not a distraction. Part of what's triumphant about it is it's such a Star Wars story for him to be able to move beyond the hate. it would be totally understandable if he said, that's great, but I don't want to. The potential for the dark side is there, so I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
What a champion of the light side to say, but what could be good about it? And I'll push through and I'll find that.
Yeah, no, it's that Excel. This needs to be an hour documentary. of he would be have a right to not want to do it. Number one, have a right to be fearful in a way, right? But choosing to push past that fear to accept the joy. And that includes 2019 in Chicago and some of our favorite moments for him Instagramming pictures on the street of running into people with Jar Jar shirts and all that kind of stuff. But I like that too, about him going, hey, maybe they don't even want me back, or maybe it's too much of a thing to be back. And I don't know, but here we are with this here. Jen, your thoughts on Ahmed and the mythology of Star Wars.
I loved that he cares so much, and you can see it from when he first was creating the character of Jar Jar, you know, him and George really crafting, like figuring out the character, and he was trying different things. He's a very thoughtful person. He's a like you said, Joseph, he's a storyteller. He's a creator. He's also a fan. So he's not just some other actor who's like, yes, I couldn't wait to be in a Star Wars. It's like, is this going to work for the story? Like, he's thinking of it almost like a writer or producer, which I think is really interesting. And there's also another layer that we've talked about, which is that I feel bad that he has to be so cautious, because he knows that if the character, if he or the actor, Ahmed, is kind of shoehorned in, right, he's going to get roasted for it. And he doesn't want to have to experience that. He's protecting himself. And I thought that that is really incredible, because he's come out on the other side of it, right? And a lot of actors would be like, Star Wars, of course I have to do it. He's like, no, I'm not going to do it if it's not right, because I'm protecting myself, my mental health. And I think that that's wonderful, but it's also sad, right? It's sad that a creator, that an actor has to think of that, that has to disable their Instagram, that has to kind of put their guard on in order to be a part of Star Wars. And that is a separate conversation, but it's just, it's not with just Star Wars, as we know, it's with a lot of other franchises, but it's interesting. 'Cause I was like, wow, that's awesome. And then I was like, oh, that kind of leaves a pit in my stomach.
No, real world stuff indeed. Bess once again took a lot of care in building out the character of Kylo Ren Beck, as he did with Jedi Temple Challenge, we should add. He worked with the Mando team and costume designer Shauna Tripic to incorporate his own tribal tattoos and Afrofuturism symbols into the character design and the costume design. Eventually, he also formed his own view of the Force, saying, to me, the Force is not just this thing that the Jedi tap into when they want to throw something heavy. The Force is this thing that is constantly moving. You're always interacting with it. I see it as like if you're underwater and you're moving through water, this is what it feels like moving with the Force. So trusting the Force means trusting these ebbs and flows of this feeling you can move with, he added. In every single situation of this, I'm really trying to tune into this bigger feeling of the Force. When I'm getting attacked by clone troopers, I feel them coming. The waves of the Force are moving me before they even show up, so I know what's about to happen because I feel the wave and I can react to the wave. Same thing on the speeder. I can just feel the ship coming so I can react to it, he says. I see him really having a lot of trust in his abilities to surf the Force. Water and imagery of water is important. It's one of our favorite things here in Star Wars, Joseph. Let's discuss Ahmed and Kelleran's views of the Force, because I love this ocean. You're swimming and you're going along with the flow, as best you
can. Yeah, I love this. I always love these discussions. It's great to hear actors who get to play Jedi of how they reckon with it, especially with somebody like Ahmed Best, who is such a trained mover, somebody who has, you know, to have been a star in Stomp, which is, you know, what one of the things that led him to being Jar Jar is that physicality, that being in touch with the body and mind connection. It's great to get to hear him describe like that relationship. It matches to me. His description of the Force matches very much the way, you know, our Jedi talk about it in the main Star Wars films. Right. It definitely matches with the way it's described in novels. So many different writers have had a chance to be in the minds of Jedi and sort of describe what that might feel like. To me, it even goes like what he's saying matches with Obi-Wan Kenobi saying, you know, that you can control it, you know, it directs you, but it also obeys your commands. That we know that. I think anybody who's been in water, even a pool, of that flow. So I love hearing that. I love the connection to the kinds of movements that he chose. And I love playing video games, and I love Star Wars as a power fantasy. I've spent a great deal of my life pretending to, you know, open doors and wishing I could will the remote into my hand. All those things are fine, but to me that isn't the story. It's not a smash the X button power. It's awareness, it's connection, it's something more. So I always love it when actors really focus on that.
Yeah, I love the flowing through it vibe. It doesn't mean you don't occasionally have to move something heavy or throw a rock at a stormtrooper. Of course, it's all part of what we see and experience, and the X button being smashed to D. But this idea of, this is my interpretation of, you're throwing a heavy rock. It means you're exerting some kind of control over the force in the situation, which, if you look at it the wrong way. And again, sometimes I understand you might have to as a Jedi. We got to see Kylo Ren in action here with that fierce glare on his face. But
yeah, the image clone trooper off the ledge. Great. I cheer. Yeah. That is a part of the fantasy, but I also like getting under the hood of the fantasy.
Yeah. No, just swimming around in it. I love his view of it here. I thought it was really great. Jed, any thoughts here on this side of it?
I love this take. It helped me visualize it because I was like, how would I be if I were a Jedi in that scene, right? It gets you into your body. You start having those thoughts of how you would move. And Jedi do kind of have an elegance when they're fighting. And that really taps into it. And I think it's interesting because nobody has really ever been able to articulate it the way that he did from an actor's point of view. I just love that. I'm going to absolutely be using that next time I'm in a lightsaber duel with my daughter.
Mom, you're flowing too hard. You're hitting me. I'm winning. Yeah, there you go. Since this interview was done before the episode, Best said this about what he hoped the reception would be, which of course means we need the follow-up interview. I want everyone who watches Star Wars to look at Kylo Ren Beck and go, I believe that guy. I want to follow that guy. Where does he go? What happens next? I think all the best stories are stories that leave you wondering what happens next. So to us, I think I know our answer, but did it work? And what does happen next? Jen, Justin had a chance to really talk about what might happen next, and we're still got it right here. But what do you think? Did this all work? All the stuff Ahmed was concerned about, all the things we talked about, did it work? And what does happen next with Kylo Ren?
It absolutely worked, because even though it was Ahmed Best, I was engrossed in the story. A lot of times when you have a familiar actor, you can kind of get caught up in, hey, that's so-and-so in that scene. That was not the case. I really believed it. And I do want to know what happens next. My daughter was like, what happens next? I said, I don't know. where are they going? I don't know. Will we see the handoff? Maybe. Will there be more danger? Perhaps. But now that the character has appeared in The Mandalorian and has played a significant role, not just a cameo, I think we will be hearing more about this character in who knows where, right? Novels, comic books, video games, who knows? The sky's the limit.
The sky's the limit indeed. Now, a lot to get to. And chapter 5 of Mando could just be Kylo Ren and Grogu. And I think a lot of folks would be happy. Joseph, picking up, I know we discussed a lot here on the Mando Report last week, but your thoughts on what Best was saying and what does happen next?
Yeah, I love that Ahmed Best is saying what we often talk about on the podcast, the idea of the tip of the iceberg storytelling, where you just see a little bit of something and it fires your imagination and it makes you wonder. And sometimes in Star Wars, you just get to always wonder and there's never an answer. Or sometimes you wait a week and there's an answer. Or sometimes you wait like 30 years and there's an answer. And that is a part of the magic and why it's fun to continue to discuss it. So I love him talking about that of like, you believe the guy of like, ooh, here's who he is. How does he have those relationship with the Naboo? How does he feel that Grogu was the only one that he managed to rescue? What is his vision of what it obviously he wants to protect Grogu, but what's his priority after that? Does he need to go somewhere else to rescue someone else? Like, how will he cope with it? All those ideas flow. What was his life like before all this kind of thing? But for me, we talked about this on the Mandalorian report. I do think it is meaningful that the armor basically asked Grogu to confront his trauma. The metaphor of you sit here and you listen to the metal slam as we see if there's any weakness in the Beskar, as we see if there's any weakness in you. What is your weakness? Why do you want to be a Mandalorian? What does it mean to you? We didn't get quite to the weakness. We got the opening the door in beginning the first part of the journey. So I'm not super excited about this, but my theory is that Grogu's memories will continue much like Din's did. And that Kelleran will fall. Maybe Kellerin will leave Grogu somewhere. He hopes he'll be safe. Yeah. So maybe the traumatic memory is Kellerin just fading into the shadows. I do think it might be Kellerin actually falling, which then leads Grogu into being alone and unprotected, and connects so much to the way that Grogu might fear to lose Din, the way Ahsoka brought up. I think that might be why if he's sitting there going, I chose to be with my dad. I'm choosing to be a Mandalorian. I'll figure out what that is. I'm a toddler, but I'll figure out what that is. and what I really, really can't allow to happen is to lose someone the way I lost that nice man who took care of me.
Ugh, that's brutal.
Look, I think I hear what you say, Joseph, too, of like, it doesn't necessarily have to mean Kellerin dies or anything. Loss. I think loss is the big overriding thing. But yeah, there's that, just some of those looks that Grogu has to Kellerin where I'm just like, oh, this might hurt.
Yeah.
And maybe it's left open ended. Maybe Kellerin is captured and they're pulled apart and he doesn't know what happened to Kellerin. You know, maybe it's not as, awful as Ahmed Best is back. Next week his character passes. That would be hard. We'll see.
Yeah. No, I'm so excited. Yeah. It's like, I think it makes a lot of sense. And even when we're talking the Mando report, but even now I'm like, I'd love a Kellerin Beck series going around trying to, lead into the path. Don't need him connected to the path. That'd be great. But like, I'm just saying like him, this is what he does. That look on his face when there are no others, but also the look on his face when he turns around and the clones are trying to kill this child like that. That's serious stuff. That's real world stuff. And it's pretty also inspiring to see it in a Jedi. So I want to see more about that. Jed, we're dancing around this here though. And we got to get your thoughts on this. We talked about it a little bit. I think it's more than possible. In fact, I even thought it was going to happen. This flashback that ships from Naboo. That's the Naboo Royal Guard. Who are his friends? And is it Jar Jar Binks?
Oh my gosh. I can't even wrap my head around that. What? What are you suggesting?
It could be, Padme's a little busy during this moment. But maybe there could be something there. I always, Handmaidens, Sabe, who knows? Keira Knightley could be back in Mandalorian.
Oh my God.
Right? Oh it could be God. There. I don't even know if I need it. I literally had that thought when he's like my friend and it's a Nubian ship and the Royal Guard that the representative of Binks was going to come down. And that might be too much, right? That might've been a step too far. And even though I would have probably cried Gungan tears of joy, it could just be a nod, right? So, hey, we got this guy. It's a nod. And maybe who's next and what's next doesn't necessarily matter to the story. We're going to go a different direction. I can totally see that. I'm not saying that this week begins with, you sit back but I kind of want it. I think that's what I'm saying. It's like, I kind of want it.
You know what? Could they do it where it's just like the back, you should see his floppy ears and maybe a side profile, right? Like, so like, just like, yeah, like I like a nod. I think a full Jar Jar, it that would take me out of the story just because, like, oh my gosh, they did. But hey, anything's possible, right?
Totally would. And when you read this interview, of course, I think that's something that Ahmed would might say. I don't know if that's right. Yeah. You're all right. You're totally right. But I'm staring at my Jar Jar Binks 6-inch Black Series figure, and I'm like, do it. Right? Like, you didn't say midichlorians. You got to correct that error. You said M count. I want Jar Jar back. I've got to own my own excitement getting out in front of my feet.
Yeah. If there's never anything else, I do like the implication that as soon as the attack started, Kellerin Beck called somebody he knew he could trust, because those guards aren't hey, we understand you have some sort of problem. They seem aware that they're there to help the younglings get away, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So that suggests some sort of coordination, some sort of like, this is absolutely somebody I can turn to. You know, yeah, it might be somebody we've never met. It might be Queen Apalna, he could be best friends with Seal Bibble.
Right.
But Jar Jar is there. Jar Jar would rescue a child. Here's my pitch. I think that Grogu has some happy memories. I think we see Kellerin and Jar Jar playing with the Shacks in the Lake Country. Lake District. Yeah. And then I think we see a real sad scene of Grogu and Kellerin at Padme's funeral.
Yes.
Oh, guys.
Yes. Jar Jar Winks. Jar Jar Winks at Keller and Beck.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh.
Go. I love that there. Yeah, with Ahsoka there. Everyone just meet over at Padme's funeral. We'll
wait, but now I want to see this. And now I want Jar Jar to entertain Grogu to make Grogu laugh. There's nothing like, you know, kids laughing. I would love to see Grogu have a little chuckle at Jar Jar's antics. Now yeah. I want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would be an opportunity to do something different with Jar Jar, right? Jar Jar is a hopeful, positive being, right? And heartbroken at what's happened, right?
Yeah.
And there is a chance to show not grimdark Jar Jar, but to show Jar Jar with some sadness, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. You could add some layers. And you know what? Give Jar Jar that beard that was rumored to show up in Kenobi, right? A bearded Jar Jar was going to, you know, maybe this is it. Maybe concept art of this leaked out years earlier. I don't know. Yeah, no. But yeah, oddly enough, there's some, like, you could layer Jar Jar in a way we haven't seen. Though I think some stuff in the Clone Wars, in which Ahmed voiced him in the layers, of course, Phil Lamar doing the other ones. I think there absolutely is some stuff there. I mean, Jar Jar has a love interest. Come on. There's more to the character. In closing, Beth talked about the legacy of Jar Jar and how that legacy is often not fully explored and celebrated enough. And talked about continuing in the Star Wars galaxy in some capacity, not pulling the full quote here. But basically, it's the stuff that I think Ahmed's very right about, number one. And two, some stuff he said before of Jar Jar was the first CGI character to this degree, to this level, to this performance capture thing, led to a lot of wonderful things. Andy Serkis very much at the center of a lot of that, of course, but for a lot of reasons, I think Jar Jar in his the character's place in that technological advancement gets overlooked. And this is pretty hopeful of Ahmed saying, you know, looking around, it's not just George, and I had to let it go a little bit back then because George, it's all about what George wants to do. Well, now there's more people making it. I'm a director now, by the way, he kind of says. There's a lot of things to do for Ahmed. So closing thoughts on this, Joseph, and where would we like to see Ahmed best go in the Star Wars galaxy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it is great to highlight that truth of Jar Jar of even if, hey, the character has never really worked for you, you don't like the character, great. You've never been online, you know, being super hateful about it. But even if the character doesn't work for you, a massive technical achievement, an amazing part of movie history. And Ahmed Best is a huge part of that by bringing the skills he had as a live performer, as a physical performer into this role. So I'm glad to see that highlighted and people be reminded of it. For future, I would love to see some Kelleran Beck in Tales of the Jedi type story. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I would love Ahmed Best to have the opportunity to be involved. You know, maybe there is a comic book run that Ahmed Best is involved in about Kelleran Beck's adventures in the prequel era. I'd be really interested in that part of Kelleran Beck's story.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I know he's, you know, he's had that one man show that he's put together. I know COVID kind of derailed that a little bit, but I think it was back up. All that kind of stuff. He's teaching now. He's doing so many wonderful things. But I just, there was a lot of, I don't know, there was a lot of intrigue in his words here, Jen, of just like, it's a big landscape, a lot of things to do at the old Lucasfilm ranch these days. And what I could do as an artist, as a creative. There's so many things. What's your thoughts on the legacy of Jar Jar and where Ahmed Best should maybe go in Star Wars?
I think he has a lot to contribute as a performer, whether it's as Kelleran Beck, you know, doing another Jar Jar type of character. He's such a great physical actor. He's so talented. But he's also a great storyteller. He understands this process. And I could see him maybe working behind the scenes, maybe becoming some sort of like producer. I don't know about director. Maybe, I mean, look, this all, they like to invest in their people, Lucasfilm does. And when they see talent, they will, you know, kind of mentor people. Look at Dave Filoni, right? They let him shadow and follow along. Maybe he could shadow some people and eventually direct one day or write, or I don't know. I think that anything is possible because he is so incredibly talented. And I think Lucasfilm knows that and they like working with him. And I think we will see more of him.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I'm with you on that. Whether it's directing an episode of Mando season 4 or something like that, that's all that's possible, or factoring in some other way. Yeah, Jar Jar, a Jar Jar story, or just a comic in general, but I don't know, a legacy of Jar Jar comic would be interesting to me.
There we go. Yeah, that'd be good.
There we go. Any final thoughts there before we move on from Star Wars news, Joseph?
Nope. I was getting distracted on the Jar Jar Binks Wikipedia page. Yeah, there are three episodes. There are five episodes in season one of Clone Wars that feature Jar Jar, and Ahmed Best backed out for three of those. And yes, Phil Amar under the pseudonym BJ Hughes did the voice there. But then Ahmed Best came back, which I just bring up is again my final thought of just like I think he is a phenomenal performer and a really, really strong person to keep choosing the love of Star Wars, the love of these characters, Jar Jar and Kelleran Beck, and choosing to remain positive instead of giving into the cruelty that was thrown at him.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was nothing short of cruel indeed. Well, the future might be bright here for Ahmed Best in Star Wars. We hope so. But even if this was just it, even if this is it, I got to say, it was quite a fun experience and still is. So there we go. Well, let's look at some Star Wars history. This week in Star Wars history, we're going to look at Star Wars past. On April 1st, 1979, Han Solo and Chewbacca raced to Star's End in the Del Rey novel Han Solo at Star's End by Brian Daley. Set before the events of A New Hope, there were some constraints on what the story could cover. That meant Daley couldn't write about the Empire, so he created the corporate sector, which would appear throughout many legend stories before a version of it entered canon with James Luceno's 2014 Tarkin novel. And of course, the concept of the corporate sector would also factor into the events of Andor. This book would go on to be part of the Han Solo Adventures Legends series. And Daley, who sadly passed away in 1996, would also go on to co-author many books with Luceno under the shared name of Jack McKinney. Where Are My Robotech Fans At? I think about 19 of them written by Jack McKinney. What is our relationship to these Han Solo books? What do we think about these books helping to usher in the expanded universe so early on in the Star Wars saga's existence? Movie comes out. You get Splinter in My Eye, of course, and then already we're like, hey, we need more adventures there. Jen, what's your relationship to these books?
Well, I remember seeing these books at Barnes & Noble in the late 80s, 90s. Yeah. I never had any desire to read them because I was always more fascinated with what happened after Return of the Jedi. So that led me to like the Timothy Zahn books. That was kind of more of, when, you know, Mara Jade and learning all about that. That was much more my jam. I must say, I've never actually read any of these books, but it is interesting.
You're not alone. I'll jump in right there and say I haven't either. And I've joked here on the podcast before of I did get the first two Lando books that came out I don't know when they came out. I can't remember, but I had them in the 80s at a library. And I've joked, but it freaked me out because I was like, where is everybody? Is Lando the Falcon? That's about only the people I know. And I just never went back to them. But I'm intrigued by these books because it makes so much sense. And I think it's part of my question too. My relationship to these books is a little low in terms of reading them, but just like, yeah, more adventures with Han. That makes a lot of sense. It did in 79 and it does now. Joseph, you might have, if I remember, you have a little bit more relationship with a lot of the Han Solo books, right?
I have not actually read them either. I believe my brother did have one of them. And I remember trying to read it when I was a very young reader. And I think I was just a little too young for it and was like, wait, so Luke isn't in this book at all. There are no lightsabers. Nobody, you know, throws anything with their mind. It was like trying to kind of find my way in and remember kind of one of those books that sat on my shelves for years and years and years with a someday. Now my main reaction when I saw this, when I saw your great notes here, I literally just went, because I recently found Star's End. I don't remember when I bought it. If it was the one my brother had when I was a wee child, I found it in my storage unit, brought it home. I brought it with me to my most recent trip to Minneapolis going, I'm going to read this. And I just still haven't had time to read it. I opened it up and read the first couple of pages and I was like, oh, child me, you missed out. It's so fascinating. Particularly now that the rest of the Star Wars galaxy has been built out and the corporate authority. When I was a kid, a corporate authority would be like, oh, I don't know. Is it Han Solo doing my dad's taxes? Well, I don't care, you know? Right. Now I'm like, this is fascinating. Love it. So
Yeah.
Desperate to find the time to read it. My last trip to Minneapolis, I went to a beloved used bookstore, Uncle Hugo's, and I found the Lost Legacy. So now every time I go to a bookstore, I'm looking for Han Solo's Revenge, and I can't wait to read them. The other thing about Brian Daley is that he also did write the dramatizations of the original trilogy for public radio, which I did listen to. Have like I had radio appointment viewing, like I was a child in the 1940s to listen to those and listen to them. I have them on cassette tape, so I need to update. I also am desperate to find time to listen to those again. So Brian Daley, very excited to discover his work and rediscover his work.
Hey, this is what I love. This is our honest relationship with this stuff. And it was a different time. We didn't have Star Wars podcast to tell you, check out Star's End, Han Solo and Chewie Star. I want to end on a positive note, but sometimes when I'm reminded of these, this is April 1979. Sometimes when that, we didn't ask for Solo. We didn't need that. Totally get that. But I'm like, that's always been the spirit of Star Wars and a lot of big fandoms, of course. But Star Wars, there's something about that. And even though I sometimes say I have a complicated relationship with Legends, it doesn't mean I don't value them or just this. This is a reminder to be like, oh, yeah, no one asked for this in 79, but we got it and people enjoyed it. And it spread the love of Star Wars. And that's part of the value.
It's also just about like how much age affects our journey. I love being able to hear from different people of different ages and how little. I think if I had been 2 to 3 years older, right, I'd see some people who are just a couple of years older than me who are like, these are some of my favorite Star Wars. I love these because they hit at the exact right time. And I was just a little too young for them.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. Good point as well. Well, there you go. It's never too late to read Han Solo and Chewbacca at Star's End. That is our episode today, folks. Thanks for listening. You know, there's a lot going out and going on in the world. Dark times, tough times, struggles inside our homes, our hearts and our minds and outside as well. But we appreciate you climbing into the Star Wars bubble with us here. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Check out our YouTube page. I just got the next episode of Figure Fights locked and loaded. So get ready for that this Thursday. Real fun one with a special guest. We'll just say Alex and Molly from Star Wars Explained. So catch that one on our YouTube channel there. Podcast available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly, as Joseph said earlier in the ask segment, on patreon.com/ForceCenter. Follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com, for more. Jen, where can they find and follow you and all your hot Jar Jar takes?
Yes. You can follow me on Instagram and YouTube at Jennifer Landa, TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138. I'm going to be taken to the streets. I'm going to start doing more videos out in the world. So stay tuned for that. Yeah. Going to maybe some geeky places around Los Angeles. That's kind of my goal. Ooh, yeah. We'll see.
Love that. Joseph, we've got a lot going on. We'll see you in London soon.
You can find me packing and planning for London in my apartment and desperately trying to set everything else in my life right before we go to London. You can follow me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw and check out my YouTube channel. Just search for Joseph Scrimshaw.
Do it, my friends. All right. Much love to you. We'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.